We're going to call to order this meeting of the Joint Committee on Student Success, May 9th, 2018. And just so people understand, this is a public hearing for the committee, which means that everything is recorded and becomes part of the public record for the legislature. And we are here to have public testimony. Just to let people know who are here that weren't here earlier, we are moving around the state from district to try to get a better understanding of what's happening in the schools of Oregon, with an understanding that at the end of this, the February session, we are going to come up with legislation that we hope will ensure that, if not all, more kids in Oregon have the facilities, the resources necessary for school districts to allow each and every one of them to be as successful as they possibly can be. And so getting input from people is really important. And so what we have decided as a committee, each time we come to a community, we first have a meeting with students, because we believe that they are one of the best resources for us to learn what's happening in schools. And so they come from all over the district. We have 4, 5, 6, 7 tables. We have 2 legislators at each table, and we move around and listen to kids for about an hour and a half. And then we have a tour of facilities and other kinds of things that are happening in the district, so we get a better understanding of what the status of all the different schools around the state are. And then we have a roundtable meeting. In the past, we had come to the point where the school districts, the teachers, all of those people came and we heard from them. We figured, why not have a meeting ahead of time with all of them and do a roundtable with all those people ahead of time, so that we can hear from parents and other interested people at the public hearing. And so we had a roundtable meeting with industry and education people earlier this afternoon and got a lot of insights from them there. And then finally, we end each of the meetings with a public hearing in the evening so parents can get here, so, and other community people who are working during the day. There's a big commitment from the people sitting up here. We've been to Baker City, we've been to Hermiston, we've been to Eugene. We have a number of these to continue all the way down to Grants Pass. Your committee is made up of people from all over the state, legislators and from all corners of the state, and they are going to introduce themselves in a second so you know who all is here. I do want to say that if you're sitting in this audience and you weren't planning on coming back later, that would be a mistake. There is a play. You can't tell that probably from looking at where we're sitting, but there is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at Clackamas High School, May 11th, 12th, 17th, and 18th, and we would encourage each and every one of you to come back to watch that. In very, very intelligent high school kids recognize that they didn't get to practice tonight, but the least they could do is get an advertisement. And I actually really appreciate that. Having had a daughter in high school who was a theater major basically in high school and then is now a playwright in New York, it is important that we support the arts in lots of different ways, and I hope that people will come back and spend some time getting to see that play being performed right here. One of our members played the Lion when he was in high school, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Where is? There he is, right down there. So that you know, there is a wide variety of talents and gifts on this podium up here. So with that, I'm Arnie Roblin. I'm the co-chair of one of the co-chairs. Our other co-chair couldn't be here tonight, but we did have the Speaker of the House with us most of the day today, and I was very appreciative of that. My district is District 5, goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. I am excited about being here, and thank you for your participation, and I'll pass it down the Senate this time. I think we went House last time.
Senator Tim Canope, representing Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River.
Good evening. I'm Mark Hass, representing the Beaverton area.
I'm Kim Thatcher. I represent Kaiser on the south up to the south part of Hillsboro. And I have 2 nieces that attend North Clackamas schools, and I had 2 siblings graduate from here. So this is kind of my sort of territory.
Kathleen Taylor. I represent Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove.
Alan DeBoer, Senate District 3, far southern Oregon, Ashland, Medford area.
Getting feedback. Yes, I am. Hi, I'm Lou Frederick. I'm Senator District 22. That's north and northeast Portland. It's the airport, the Lloyd Center. You've probably been there.
Hello, my name is Chuck Thompson. I am your state senator here in this district, and it goes from here to my hometown of Hood River. So it's a very spread out district, but I am proud to be here tonight. And don't be shy. Let the panel know exactly what you're thinking tonight, and thanks for coming.
Good evening, everyone. I am State Representative Janelle Bynum. I am your state representative here in House District 51. I represent...
You're squeaky.
I represent East Portland, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, North Clackamas, and Happy Valley, and welcome to my district.
Check. I thought by disconnecting we would control the feedback. Hello, everybody. I'm Diego Hernandez. I represent the furthest east of Portland you can get, House District 47.
Hi there. Thanks for coming. I'm Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julie Fahey. I am the state representative from West Eugene, Junction City, and parts of rural Lane County.
Good evening. Buenas noches. My name is State Representative Teresa Alonzo Leon, and I represent District 22, which is Woodburn through the north part of Salem.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Reardon, State Representative for District 48, which is Lentz down into Happy Valley. So I proudly represent a good part of North Clackamas School District.
I'm Jeff Helfrich, House District 52 Representative, which is all of Hood River County, North Clackamas County, and East Multnomah County.
So that's us, and we are really proud of the fact that so many of our members make it to each and every one of these meetings because they come from a long ways away. We usually start by having a special panel at the very beginning of the session. We have chosen to do that again tonight, so we're going to have Rep. Bynum and Senator Thompson come on up to the front of the table, and they will be our first panel, and then we have... on board, Mitzi Bauer and Nadia Borea. I hope I did that right. Patricia Squire. And they can come sit right up here in these front tables, and we'll have them as our second panel. And when we start having the panels come up, we give each person 2 minutes, and there's a little screen you can watch. We don't turn that on for these first two because they're our welcoming group. So.
Oh, so we're not limited to 2 minutes? That's not fair. It should be the same for everybody.
But you told us we had to be specialists. So
oh, sure, yeah. sure. I want to thank the panel. I realize this is a very time-consuming thing for the legislators that were chosen to be on this panel. I know that you're starting to go all over the state. I hope the people behind me realize the time commitment that means, that you give up your daily work that you're doing or whatever, your family and all those things to go to those areas, because I know if you're going to Baker, it's probably a 3 or 4 day trip to do that, and I really appreciate that. I know the folks that have come here tonight are here because they are interested in education for our kids. I know that my time has been spent in Salem as a legislator for 6 years now on the Education Budget Committee with Senator Roblin is on that committee. Kathleen Taylor is on that. Rep. Kathleen Taylor was on that committee. And I know we've spent, and oh, Rep. Hernandez is on that committee. And we spent a lot of time together trying to do what's best for K-12 in Oregon, and that is to fund them at the maximum that we can. I know with several different priorities counties that are in Salem. It's really hard sometimes to do that, but I think what you are probably hearing throughout the state is that K through 12 needs more dollars for education, and I'm hoping to get behind you and in February in the next session, if I'm reelected, to help you lead that fight to bring our K through 12 funding up to the level that needs to be. But I thank you for your service. Thanks.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, thank you all for coming to visit North Clackamas today. I hope that each of you saw some of the really great things that are going on in our community. I hope you also saw some opportunities. I hope you hear those opportunities tonight. And I've invited several members of the community, including our North Clackamas FFA, and I want you to listen to them and listen to their words. I think they are a shining example of what our kids can become. I've also invited another superintendent that I support in our district, and I hope you hear her words in terms of trying to deliver the very best students that we can into the Oregon workforce. And I hope that you hear the general community and the parents that have brought their children, the parents that are spending this evening coming and telling us we need to do more, we need to do better, and that we can deliver on that. One thing I did not do, and this is what I commit to being better about, is to making sure that our business community knows that we must deliver a workforce that is ready for them. That is, I think, as a business owner, that is the number one issue that we're having today. We're not talking necessarily about taxes. We're talking about being able to find the right people to fit the jobs that we have. So I hope that you hear us with open ears, with open arms. I always say I have the very best district, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. These are very special people, and I hope that you hear all that they have to say and take home many wonderful ideas. So welcome to North Clackamas.
Thank you both.
No question?
No questions.
Really?
That way we get to talk hear from more people. Next, we'll have Mitzi, Nadia, and Patricia come on up, and then on deck, they can come sit right over here. Cindy Gregor, Michael Salzo, Phil White on deck. And if I murder your name, it's just because I'm a dyslexic kid and I can mix things up anytime I want. So when you're up there, you can identify yourself at the beginning of the meeting so that it'll be on the record correctly. That'll always be nice. So thank you.
Thank you, legislative leaders, for coming tonight and providing this opportunity for input. My name is Mitzi Bauer. I've been a volunteer for about 28 years in the schools, and I'm also on the school board. What works in our district? We have a lot of caring parents, community, dedicated staff. We have an equity policy. And I think you visited quite a few of our quality programs. The Ready, Set, Go preschool program makes a huge difference getting kids ready. Language immersion, Web Academy, charters, IBAP, orchestra, New Urban, where we don't give up on kids, and the CTE program. However, maintaining these programs are expensive, and they do impact other programs. As you know, our class sizes are very large, larger than a lot of other school districts. We have a long school year. We need assistance for teachers with behavioral specialists, counselors, social workers, mental health support, and TAG. We need to fully fund special ed. We're higher than the cap. Provide meaningful professional development for our teachers that we can hopefully retain. So I want to point out to you, as you know, you're looking for best practices and you're looking for data. The quality education model, the last one was published August 2018. It will be published every 2 years at the beginning of the biennium. There's a lot in there. That is a data-driven tool that allows us to calculate the investment required to provide every student in Oregon with an education founded on best practices. These are strategies and programs that are demonstrated by research. They're there. Look at them. I have submitted just a couple pages even if you look at page 11 and page 50 and 51. What does it take to be effective? Relationships. That means lower class sizes, connections with adults, high expectations, CTE, quality teachers, rich curricular and extracurricular programs. They have prototype schools, and I'll sum up really quick. One example, this high school has about 2,500 kids. The ratios to counselors should be 1 to every 250. We have 6. We need 4 more. The QEM states that the last year's budget should have been 9.971. We were 1.2 short. So please do something about that. Adopt a corporate tax. Fix the kicker. It's time to invest in quality education for all the kids, and we need your leadership now. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, my name is Nadia Boria. I stand before you today to share my concerns, not for our schools today, although clearly there are many concerns that I share, but out of my concerns for the future. Tomorrow's teachers are sitting in our classrooms today. Over 60% of teachers teach within 20 miles from where they graduated high school. I'm one of those as I graduated from Clackamas. Research shows that the number one influencer on student achievement is having a highly skilled teacher, not a curriculum, not a school building, not a zip code, but a person. Yet with the conditions of our schools in Oregon, America's best and brightest are not interested in pursuing a career in teaching. Only 4% of ACT takers indicate an interest in teaching. Teacher prep programs are down 35% since 2009, and they continue to fall. The future is not looking bright for the students of tomorrow. This makes me sad, as this is the work that I believe in. When the students in our classrooms today look around and see the conditions of our schools, they're choosing other professions. The realities of today's classrooms are different than the classrooms that you and I experienced. Our students see teachers and students being hit, bit, kicked, verbally assaulted by students, and then are returned to class 30 minutes later. Yet, we still believe in this work. Class sizes are so large that there are days when I don't get to personally talk or connect to each of my students, let alone ensure that they're grasping the concepts taught. Yet, we believe in this work. Students coming to school with such severe trauma and mental health issues, that makes learning the least of our concerns. And still, we believe in this work. Giving everything we have during the day to our kids at school, so when we go home late, after working several extra hours of our own time, we have nothing left to give our own kids. And still, we believe in this work. After pouring our heart and soul into our most difficult students time and time again, and then feeling so deflated when we're told by administrators that this is just a part of the job, where a thank you would have gone so much further. Yet we believe in this work. The work that I believe in is really important work, not only for our kids, but for our communities and for our state. But as educators and as stakeholders beyond this district, how do we look into the eyes of our students today and encourage them to join this profession that we believe so much in? When no matter how hard we try, it's never enough, we feel like we failed our kids. How do we support the teachers who are here today doing this work and encourage others to join this critical profession? We have to do better to ensure the strength of our schools for today so that we can be prepared for the schools of tomorrow.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming. My name is Patricia Squire. I'm a resident of Lake Oswego here in Clackamas County. I'm also a product of Oregon Public Schools K through graduate school. I'm also a member of the American Association of University Women, and it's an organization that's been advocating on behalf of women and girls since 1981. Our particular concern tonight is Title IX and how it impacts the safety and therefore the success of our students. With all of the things going on in our country today, I think safety and a sense of being safe is the backdrop of any student's success. If a student does not feel that they are being treated fairly and equitably and are safe from bullying and harassment, school cannot be a success. Title IX of the Civil Rights Act states that there will be no gender discrimination in any educational institution, period. Unfortunately, many think Title IX is just about sports because those are the cases that get attention. But it's also about any gender discrimination, including harassment, bullying, and outright sexual assault. In Oregon, apparently Title IX is not taken very seriously. Right now, there is only one employee who works one quarter time to serve the entire state. One quarter time. Each school is required to have a Title IX representative. That individual should be trained in how to develop and put procedures in place for reporting complaints, investigating complaints, and in how to devise a curriculum for healthy student relationships. Can one one-quarter time person really do that for the entire state? Without training, how can the coordinators at each school, who most likely have another full-time job, give any attention to this important piece of school safety? Oregon law says that sexual harassment will not be tolerated in Oregon schools. A one-quarter time person to handle Title IX for the entire state does not serve this law. Title IX staffing needs to be fixed.
Thank you all. Thank you all. I use my microphone again. The next group can come forward, and after that we have Phil White, Emily Moore, and April Etuck. And sorry if I murdered any of your names. If you have comments that you want to send in writing, you can do so at our email is jcss@oregonlegislature.gov. We'll get that out a few more times. But with that, welcome here, and we'd love to have your testimony. Whoever wants to go first.
Okay. Hello. My name is Phil White, and I'm here because my granddaughter attends Portland Online Schools, and I had her write down a few things of what she liked about her online school. I wanted to see it continue. And the number one thing that she put on here was, I don't get bullied. And just a little background on that. My daughter, her mom, is mentally ill. And so she's been through a lot. And when she came to us and we got guardianship, she has emotional, some difficulties. And she shared with some friends that her mom was mentally ill, homeless. And eventually that turned into a weapon. And she started to get bullied at school for this. And it just made school a nightmare for her. And it continued on through the cell phone and that kind of thing. So we heard about public online schools, and she said she wanted to do this. And a year later, she's only going to counseling now once a month. It was twice a week. And so that's for her is number one, is I don't get bullied. And then she says she can go at her own pace, which is not slow. She's smart. Her grades have improved. She's ahead of the game on the percentile of what you have to have completed. And she says, I think it's easier. Not that it's academically easier. It's easier because she doesn't have to catch a bus. She doesn't have to, she can go at her own pace. She gets up, she likes to get up at 6. And she's already got a couple classes done by 9 o'clock in the morning. And also she likes it if she's, struggling on something, she can go out and jump on the trampoline for a while and come back and work on it again. And what she says about the teachers, they're really nice and they help me and others a lot. She also mentors other kids. That's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, and is it Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee. Michael Salator, I'm a special education director in Malala. I live in Gresham. I've been there for 4 years. This is a new role for me as being a special education director, and I will tell you, from my experience, Oregon is experiencing a mental health crisis. Thank you for your testimony. It is unconscionable that Oregon sits at 49th out of 50 states in terms of access to mental health. The mandate that I hold in my responsibility in my job as special education director is that I'm to assure that all children in my area have access to services and care so they can access their education. The community pays for mental health dollars through Medicaid, through their federal taxes that go to these dollars. And then when mental health doesn't step up to the plate and do their job, because there is no mandate, I'll repeat that, there is no mandate for mental health services to be applied. So the responsibility falls on me and my school board to fund. I'm $500,000 over budget, by the way, because I'm placing these kids in mental health placements, therapeutic schools, in areas where they're getting the services they need. More than happy to have you down to Malala. I'd be happy to buy you lunch and tell you about some of these kids, because every week I look into the face of a family, of a parent who's crying out for help, but they can't get access because mental health does not have a mandate, and the CCOs are sitting on a bucket of money, and they're not spending it. The data is really clear on that. The second piece I wanted to bring up, and I'll keep this really brief, is there is a crisis right now in special education teachers. And to the teacher's point earlier, you all did a wonderful job as a legislature on getting speech-language pathologists. Now, I posted two positions. I've already got them filled for next year. Great job. Now we need to do more to recruit and support special education teachers because the mandate just keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And if we don't have the people to do the work, then we can't meet it. Thank you for your time.
Wow. It's amazing that I'm sitting right here beside him. We haven't met before, but I'm one of those parents crying out for help. My name is Cindy Greger, and I have three children here. I have two that are learn in a normal academic environment, the way the classrooms are currently set up, and then I have one who's a special needs kid, and he has been diagnosed with ADHD and bipolar disorder, so he has a lot of learning differences. I don't want to say learning disabilities, because he can learn, but not in the classrooms that we have right now. And so I'm going to go to my words now here. So learning and comprehending in mainstream was not working for my son. Even on an IEP, school was a disaster. I should add, he has massive anxiety. Before the end of eighth grade, he refused to go. I couldn't get him to go. He is not stupid. He just learns differently. He wrote an email to the district and the teachers, and I quote, he says, "You guys, the special ed teachers, insult me. The math, when you give me a worksheet, it's obviously different than everyone else in the class. You attempt to mark out third grade," he's an eighth grader, "you attempt to mark out third grade with a Sharpie, but I can still see it." Well, that's certainly a self-esteem killer. The mainstream classrooms with 30 plus kids did not allow the individual attention that he needed. We realized that he needed to do something else. We felt bad for even insisting that he go to school. We had to find an alternative. There weren't many options available, and I'd love to talk to you more about some of the placements that you have, but alternative schools, he didn't come with that basic set of tools that you have to have to be a student. And so without that, any of the other options weren't available. I argued with the school district. We battled, and they said, "We can take care of this." But it'd been 9 years, and they hadn't taken care of it. I just want to finish by saying I have so much more to say, and I'd like to offer some solutions because I do have some ideas on how my son could be helped. But it's not by dealing with some of the administrators that I had to deal with who said to me when I was struggling with this and said, "I just need to make sure that my son is saved." I was told, "You just might need to accept that he can't be saved." That's not okay. Thank you.
So if you have some notes that you would like to hand in, you can hand them up here, and we can get those to us as well.
Actually, I brought worksheets. These are from school, public school. This is what he's doing now that I'm spending $5,000 a month for privately. So,
okay. If you want to leave some of that, that would be helpful.
I'm sorry?
If you want to leave any of that or get it to us, that
thank
would
you.
Be
I'm
helpful.
I'm going to get
too.
Copies to you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Our next group, and we also can have we've got April. Amy, is it Ituik? Ah, thank you. You can come on up here with this group, too. And then we'll go to on deck, Dr. Pereira, Kathy War, and Way. That's right, Kathy Way, and David Gutzler.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. My name is Emily Morcoon, and I am a teacher, and I've been a teacher in Oregon for 15 years, born and raised in the Oregon School District through my master's program. I am speaking tonight in regards to two things, our funding issue, but the discrepancy that we have with funding within our state and our districts. Many districts are able to offer option levy bonds, which can fund additional teachers, additional technology, additional days, and resources where other districts can't. An example of that is I currently teach in the Beaverton School District, and I'm in my second year. Prior to that, I spent 13 years in the Reynolds School District, so I know many of you are representing districts I work in. If you take a look at the Beaverton School calendar, and Superintendent Utterback did a really good job of running an audit on Beaverton and North Clackamas, you'll see that Beaverton schools attend 3 additional days, approximately more a year. Next year, Beaverton will be adding 3 more additional days. That's a total of 6. So if we're looking at a K through 12 span of education, you are addressing a week's additional from the time they enter kindergarten to the time they enter 12th grade, just depending on what side of the river they live on. In addition to that, if Beaverton passes their bond on May 15th, they will be able to continue to fund 300 additional teachers. So that means that they will have smaller class sizes than on another side of the river. To me, this is completely unacceptable. We have children every day in our schools that are homeless. We have children every day in our schools that are on IEPs that need additional curriculum and instruction given to them. And to me, it is insulting as an educator that I moved from one district to another and there was no consistency. And I find that appalling because those children in Reynolds had just as many needs as the children in Beaverton. And we have to do something. Like, I am tired of there's not any funding. My whole career has been in there is not enough funding. But our children deserve so much more than what is currently happening. And it's not fair to tell a family that they should have to move on one side of a river or another to receive a higher level of education. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Yes.
Comment.
I'll let you make a comment.
You
have to have the microphone.
I very much appreciate that testimony, and I think it speaks and is emblematic of one of the problems that we're trying to solve here, and that is the legislature, which funds education, by far the largest budget that we have in the state. We have no say over where that money is spent to these districts. If Beaverton adds 6 more days than North Clackamas, it's up to the districts. It's not up to us, and so therefore we're not accountable for the problems that you just spoke of, and we should be, because after all, we're the ones who are spending taxpayer dollars. And not that this is there's any easy solution here, but I think it capsulizes one of the major problems we have in funding education.
Vice Chair Roblin and committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is April A. Tuck from Portland, Oregon. I have 2 students that attend Oregon Virtual Academy online school. We chose it because our children's privately funded education was declining, just the atmosphere administratively, the teachers, that sort of thing. And we didn't want to thrust our children into an unknown environment where they knew no one at all. My son had attended the school for several years. What I've witnessed with Oregon Virtual Academy is that my children have grown immensely. I didn't realize through private school that my daughter in the 3rd grade didn't like math. She's an avid reader. She's been reading since 2, but she hated math. And I didn't know that until we brought school home this way. And you're able, my son is actually, he has done a great deal of growth. I've seen it through writing and comprehension, things that you don't get in a classroom full of 30 children, bullying or whatever else comes with that environment. You get to just really gear whatever they need for that day. If it's just math, it's just math. You're allowed to do that. You get to take your time. Your child is not compared to another student. You get to sow good seeds into your child and to re-encourage them. What we've also noticed with Oregon Virtual Academy, the teachers want to be there. Not yet have we come across a teacher that didn't want to be there. And teachers that want to be where they are, you get great results with that. I'm a great avid for just this little saying I've realized since I've had my children is that we are all farmers and they are fertile soil.
and we get to choose what gets in there. And Oregon Virtual Academy allows us to cultivate an environment that will influence them in a way that we hope will bear good fruit, or will get good fruit in the end when they're older, or, you know, so... Thank you. I really hope that you continually fund it, because it's necessary. It really is a necessary thing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Ime Atuk, parent and her husband. So I have the same two kids.
Yes.
Time. Watching it tick. It's pressure, right? Time. Funny thing about time is that with my career, I travel a lot. And I guess over 2015, 2016, I was home every weekend, but on the road during the week, and I lost a lot of
time.
Now, with Orva, I have more time with my kids, time to go beyond what's in the books. We can see a lesson and hop in the car and go to Newport if we're talking about the ocean, or a park. Time. Kids learned about Louisiana Purchase, and just so happened I had a job where we spent about a month in Louisiana. So they got to real time see how that affected today. Time. Online public school has given me time with my family, and that's a gift that I'll keep forever. And because of that, I am a huge advocate, very thankful that it exists and that the resources are there to support both students that we have. And we'll forever be thankful for time.
Thank you all. So we'll have our next people who are on deck come on forward. And then Katie Ray, Josie Handreck, and Tina Lyons are on deck down below.
Go ahead.
Good evening. I am David Gutzler. Over the last 4 years, I've been listening to students, parents, teachers, and administrators about what's happening at school and what is not happening in school. I'd like to make 2 points tonight. My first point is, I feel that there are some very important people that are not part of the discussion very often regarding the subject of graduation. These are the parents of the students. Schools need to keep the parents informed of programs and opportunities. Parents need to understand the interests and participation of their student. I realize that this is not easy to do, but it's critical. My second point is, I hope we're not getting tunnel vision and focusing only on a number. The graduation rate. For me, we need to examine the educational process from age 14 through 18. What are the inputs to this process? Middle school performance, interests entering high school, plans for high school. What is happening during the educational process? Programs, opportunities, feedback, and engagement for the student by learning and doing. And what are the outcomes of this process? Graduation, student feels good about themselves, student sees a role for themselves in the community, and has a plan for life after high school. Let's examine the entire educational process to achieve student success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, my name is Kathy Way, and I was here earlier for the Educational Leadership Roundtable, but I'm here twice to make a statement. So I'm here to talk about improving Oregon's graduation rates, and one of the ways that we can do that is through continued investment in career and technical education. The fact remains that Oregon is still the third worst state in the nation in terms of our graduation rates, and I am very grateful that you are doing this to mentor and looking for ways, perhaps reinforcing ways, that we can help our kids succeed in life. This is also an issue that affects children of color, particularly English language learners. By the end of next year, nearly 800 English learners will drop out of high school. Many are children of color. And less than half of them, the ELL kids in Oregon, will graduate from high school in 4 years. This will negatively impact their future livelihood. I have been an ELL child, and I have also seen just the devastating effects that, you know, higher education wasn't given to a lot of folks in my communities who identified. So this is very important. I want to talk specifically about Measure 98 that was passed by voters on a 2-to-1 margin in November, and I would like to see that funding continue. It got funded at half, and that is not enough. Our school board just received a presentation about how our district will implement Measure 98 funding in order to provide more coding classrooms, more opportunities, more resources for our kids so that they're not dropping out. And I would love to see the positive effects of Measure 98 continue not only in North Clackamas, but in districts all across Oregon. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, panelists. My name is Catrice Poirier, and I have the pleasure and honor of serving as superintendent of Gresham Barlow School District. And I have a few words I'd like to share with you this evening, and I will also make sure that I email that to you as well. The school district and Multnomah County serve a little over 100,000 students, with Gresham Barlow serving about 12,000 of those students. And we have about 1,100 employees. 11% of our students are English language learners, with 59 different native languages spoken within our classrooms. 13% of our students are special ed, got to get that term right in Oregon. Yep. And more than half of our students receive free and reduced lunch. Like all districts around the state, we are working hard to identify efficiencies in our budget to do the best that we can with an ever complicated budget. As you will hear from most of the superintendents around the state, the majority of our budgets, approximately 78% for Gresham Barlow, goes towards staffing and benefits. Yet still, we would love to be able to reduce our class sizes and add additional opportunities for our students. One area in which we are continuously focusing on is creating new opportunities and pathways, and the Measure 98 dollars has helped with that. In CTE, we have successful transitions out of high school, and if you look at our last report card, you'll see that the Gresham Barlow School District has trended higher than the state average, and that like districts for the state, for the same rate of students are continuing their education through community college and four-year programs. In addition to the CTE programs, our comprehensive high schools, we are thrilled to be able to partner with one of our charter schools, the Center for Advanced Learning. Well, along with Reynolds and Centennial School Districts, we offer our students opportunities to spend a portion of their day learning about fields of interest with hands-on experiences and interactions with local industry partners while earning college credit. This is one of the examples of the type of programs we would like to be able to offer more of, but it goes without saying that there are certain constraints of our ability to do so. Between increasing PERS and et cetera, I'll move on to my last piece here. I want to ask that we are able to look at opportunities to create, because our profession is dying. I've been in this profession about 25 years, and the more I go out to recruit, the less people I see. And so I think it would be to our advantage to look at opportunities to grow our own right in our programs. We're looking to diversify. Well, guess what? Our high schools are some of the most diverse centers in this state. And we would love to be able to grow our own. I ask you to really seriously consider allowing our high school students to use some of their Oregon Promise dollars to begin that program early so that we can help. And actually also helping higher ed allow all credits to transfer to a university. That's an equity issue when they deny a student an opportunity to transfer credits that they have earned in high school. I've been in a few different states, 5 different districts, and I think there are ways for us here in Oregon to replicate some of those programs that would contribute to our state's most precious commodity, and that is our students. Thank you for your time. I apologize for going over. The passion just oozes out there.
Yes, it does. That's very good. Thank you. Thanks for being here tonight. Our next group can come forward. On deck group, come on up. That's them, isn't it? Okay. Dixie Daniels, Linda Brown, and Angelo Peterson will be next on deck. Thank you. That's okay.
Hi. My name is Katie Ray. I'm the homeless liaison for the North Clackamas School District. And I would like to talk a little bit about affordable housing and access to resources for families in our community. I think there's a lot of things that our district does really well. I work at a thriving community center, the Wichita Center, if you've heard of it. So we have a number of resources that we provide on site that are pretty low barrier to families. So basically, if you have a student who goes to our school district, you can come there. We're open often, and we have food, clothing, hygiene, and school supplies available. So that's something that we do really well, and I think that another thing is we have a very caring community that we're highly connected to. We also have very caring staff members in our school district. We have teachers who over the years have taken families out to dinner when they're in crisis. They've bought clothing for students. They've picked students up and taken them to school when they needed to, just gone above and beyond the requirements and the description of their job. However, as a school district and a community, there's only so much that we can do to meet the needs of our students. And I think that unless there's a systemic movement towards addressing the affordable housing crisis, then we're just going to be coming up short. Currently in Clackamas County, we have one family shelter that is closed right now because it's under construction. So unless you're fleeing a domestic violence situation, there's nowhere for you to go in our community to access emergency shelter. There was a shelter in Portland. I'm sure you're aware the roof collapsed, and there hasn't been a replacement for that. It's also becoming less and less available to residents of Clackamas County. It's more focused for Multnomah County. So that means I have families and parents who are in crisis, who have nowhere to go. We have more families this year living in cars. As a result of that, they're doubled up with family members that they basically shouldn't be living with for safety reasons. We've got overcrowding situations. And the domestic violence shelters, while we do have access to them, there's a network of them throughout Multnomah, Clackamas, and Clark County. They're often full, so we have families who are desperately fleeing violent situations with nowhere to go. I have more to say, but I can email it to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. My name is Tina Lyons, and I'm a small business owner in Portland. I wanted to share with you some of my concerns as a proud aunt and someone who cares deeply about our local economy. We need an educated workforce for my business, but also for kids like my nieces who may or may not be college bound. Oregon remains the third worst state in the nation in terms of graduation rates, so I'm grateful that you are doing this tour and looking for ways to help our kids succeed in life. It's important to point out that we don't need new solutions for problems we know how to solve. We need lawmakers to double down on what we know works and what people across Oregon overwhelmingly voted for. I'm referring to Measure 98. As you know, it provides funding for career and technical education, dropout prevention strategies, and dual credit opportunities. If you look at Oregon's current graduation rates, you'll see exactly why CTE is so important. While our statewide graduation rate is 76%, students who have a half credit of CTE graduate at 86%, and kids with a full credit graduate at 92%. Regarding dropout prevention, kids are making this life-altering choice before they can possibly understand the consequences. If we want to catch students before they make a mistake that will follow them the rest of their lives, we need to make sure educators have the support they need to do so. If we truly want to excite our kids about college, we need to start exposing them to college-level opportunities early. Dual credit courses are vital, but there are not enough of them, and not all colleges honor them. To help kids succeed, we must change this. Voters approved Measure 98, which funds all these solutions, by a 2-to-1 margin, 2/3 vote, which amounted to more than 1.2 million votes. This should be considered an overwhelming mandate. So it's frustrating that lawmakers only funded the measure at half the amount needed. We told Salem that we wanted this, and Salem says, that's nice, but we're not going to do that. I hope the representatives here tonight will fix that. Please be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening. My name is Josue Andrade. I'm a senior here in Clackamas High School. I've attended all 4 years of high school here, and I would like to talk about the opportunities and the choices I've been given through the classes at Schellenberg. During my 4 years attending the North Clackamas School District, I've taken Japanese, radio broadcasting, animal science, and coding. Through my animal science class alone, I've gotten the opportunity to participate in contests as far as Indianapolis. And I'll be the first to say that I'm not planning on following a career in every single industry that surrounds the classes I've taken. But they definitely helped me make up my mind with the path I want to follow. I'm planning on going to CCC to study arts and media, and I'm not the only one that has benefited from these classes. Three of my friends from my animal science class are planning on going to OSU to study animal science. One of my friends who graduated it is currently a welder after taking welding classes in Schellenberg, and one of my friends in the health science classes is planning on being a doctor. The point I'm trying to make is that courses like the ones offered in Schellenberg do more than just teach us technical skills. They teach us skills to survive in the real world. They teach us how to earn an honest living. I know there we have a long ways to go when it comes to proper funding for our schools, but I would like to show my appreciation to the efforts that have been made. Money from programs like the Pathway Dollars have definitely made a difference, especially in the land lab, the North Clackamas Schools farm, which is where I spend most of my time. It's paid to upgrade out their technology, and it's made the place a lot safer. And it helps when you don't have to worry about getting injured, and you can actually focus on learning. I know that I'm on my way out as I graduate, but my sisters will be coming here in the future, and I know that they will be walking into a school which is in a better position than it was when I did. Like I've said, we have a long ways to go, but members of the committee, the efforts you put into securing additional school funding won't go unnoticed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you. So the next group on deck can come on up, and then we have Shane Wendell, Hunter Curry, and Orlando Perez.
Good evening, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I want to thank you for taking on this task because you've actually been put in a very, very difficult problematic trap. Your committee was formed to...
Make sure you give your name, too.
I'm sorry.
For the record.
Linda Brown. I'm chair of the Clackamas Education Service District. Your committee was formed based upon the listening tour that led to a good transportation package. But here's your problem. People could see potholes. People could sit in traffic and know there was a problem. But what you've been hearing tonight, and what I know that you've been hearing as you're doing your tour, is that schools are in crisis because children are in a crisis. People assume that schools and kids are pretty much the way they were when they were last in school. But here's the situation. We have a soaring suicide rate in Oregon. We have children who are hungry, who are homeless, who are hopeless, who are dealing with addiction issues, and those are not directly related to the classroom. But that leads to kids who have chronic absenteeism and problems learning because they are not in a position to learn. So what I'm asking you to do is think big. Think deep and large. What are the possibilities for holding those kids in an era, in a way that they are better protected so that they are able to learn? ESDs are positioned around the state, and we work with every school district. How about empowering us with the funds to have a stable of psychologists so that when schools have a crisis, we can send them help rather than have education classroom dollars going towards that necessary service? How about finding ways to make sure that homelessness and the dollars that go to human services are not directly taking away from the money that you want to put into classrooms? Because right now, they are affected classrooms. Think big. Thank you.
My name is Dixie Daniels. I teach second grade at Mount Scott Elementary. Go Eagles.
I spent the day today teaching 28 second graders, and then I went to a three-hour science meeting, and now I'm here before you. This is sort of new to me. I have no idea what my husband is eating for dinner. My guess is it's Wednesday, so Sherry's, because you get a free slice of pie. I didn't prepare anything because I am new to this, so I guess I'd just like to give you a few snapshots into my world. I am the benefactor of a beautiful new classroom, thank you to the bond. However, for the first 3 weeks in my classroom, I couldn't lock my door. And I just kind of want to stop there, and I want you to think about that. I couldn't lock my door. And every day I went in there, I looked at 28 faces, and I couldn't lock my door. I couldn't lock my door. I can't even wrap my head around that. Also, several years ago, I got to have 39 kids in my classroom. It required opening the bendy wall so that I could fit in the desks. I don't remember the names of any of those children. And I apologize now to the community and to the family and to those kids. It was horrible. And it looks like we might be looking at more days of that. I'd also like to say that I do like my job and I do care. And 7 years ago, I took one of my sixth graders home with me, and she is a freshman at U of O, and I'm extremely proud of her. And had I not done that, she wouldn't be at U of O today. And that's not because of something that I did, because I'm special. In my world, I see teachers doing that every day.
Hello, thank you for coming to listen to all of us. I know you probably care just as much, if not more, than some of us. My name is Angela Peterson. I am actually used to teach with Dixie at Mount Scott, and I left to the profession for a while to have three babies back-to-back who are all now enrolled in Clackamas Schools. I am also a graduate of Clackamas Schools, as my husband is as well, so we like to stay around. This is a great community. There's so much to offer, so many great teachers in our schools, but sadly, I don't really want to return to my profession that I love. Because I know that I can't properly care for my family and meet all the demands that are placed on teachers today. I have three amazing kids who, they do okay in school, but I have to say I've coined a phrase, and I call it a public school-induced learning disability. And what I mean by that is I have two sons on IEPs. One of them is probably only on an IEP because of this public school-induced learning disability, where he was placed in classrooms with 32 to 37 children in grades second through fifth grade. There are major gaps in his education, and he struggles to this day as an eighth grader. Those teachers cannot possibly do their jobs. We are asking far too much of our educators. The kids deserve better. Teachers are leaving the profession in droves. As you've heard, there are less teachers going into the profession. We can't afford to lose these good teachers. These kids deserve better. My kids are fortunate that they have a stay-at-home mom who's a substitute teacher, and I am their advocate, and I find myself, I'm a public school teacher battling the public school to get my kids served correctly. I'm fortunate that I can afford to pay tutors. It breaks my heart to see all the kids that don't have involved parents to advocate for them, that don't even know where to start because they're not teachers themselves. And these kids are falling through the cracks. That's why our graduation rates are so horrible. So please, please help our kids. We deserve much better. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Our next group can come up and take their seats. And with that, we have Kelly Kupka, Jeremy Ashe, and Juanita Hess.
Thank you.
My name is Hunter Curry, and I am a teacher in Sandy, Oregon, and a parent in Gresham. And I would like to add to a Dixie snapshot of a classroom. This is my 14th year of teaching. Here's a list of 25 things children demand to one degree or another from their teachers each day. Each item is inspired by and in honor of one of my 25 delightful fourth graders. 1, reminder to save running and playing for outside at recess time. 2, coaching on how to sort out friend problems. 3, additional time to practice reading to build fluency and confidence. 4, cajoling to come back to the small group because of hurt feelings. 5, support in working through social challenges due to autism. 6, advanced concepts and more challenging work. 7, patience and kindness to practice English out loud in class. 8, answers to questions about history such as, was this before or after God? 9, reminder to use legible handwriting. 10, yes, you may use the restroom. 11, help finding lost papers. 12, discussing unkind words used at recess. 13 through 16, listening to a story about what happened at home last night, last summer, plans for the weekend, how they did a math problem incorrectly. 17, help getting homework ready because they're leaving early. 18, sorting out what happened at recess. 19, checking in to see if they're on the correct page in the workbook. 20, positive feedback for excellent thinking. 21, reminder of what we are supposed to be doing on the Chromebooks. 22, encouraging a reluctant writer. 23, reminder to keep talking on topic. 24, email conversation with parents about behavior. 25, conversations about how a math problem was solved. These are only 25 examples of moments when teachers are expected to encourage, validate, challenge, remind, model, and perhaps even teach. Imagine this all day. Imagine this in addition to communication, data analysis, paper grading, material preparation, and all of the other tasks that come with teaching, including the actual delivery of material. Class size matters, and it is something that can be solved with creative and courageous policy. It is generally accepted that we cannot solve most challenges children have at home, but we must acknowledge that they bring these challenges to school. And every additional child in a classroom means every child is getting less of what they need from their teacher. Children are coming to school needier than ever. Even 25 precious souls is too much. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Orlando Perez. Thank you for coming tonight and listening to our input. There's 4 or 5 things, but what I don't get to, I will send in an email. As a parent, and also as a parent of 2 elementary children, and as a president of our school PTA, I've been at school more often than not. In fact, I was recently informed by a volunteer coordinator from PTA that I log more than 400 hours, which made me wonder why sometimes when I'm walking down the hallway to talk to our principal, he's running in the other direction. But with all due seriousness, the reason I mentioned the hours, it has allowed me to make some observations. One is, many times this year I've witnessed 2 to 3 students in the front office for various behavioral issues. I've seen many staff and teachers, principal working with them, requiring them to be away from other classrooms or other areas where they could be helping. Come to find out, we have many students with mental health issues, but we don't have adequate support nor the full-time counselors required to work with these students. This is leading and has led to dangerous situations, including one in my child's classroom. I can't count how many times she came home this year to say that she had to leave the classroom with all the other students because there was one student out of control, several times throwing things at the teacher or at other students. I'm running short on time. Number 2, I'm going to jump to bus drivers. Another thing that I've noticed with my insider perspective this year is that I've noticed students have stayed after class in the front office on more than 1, 2, 3 occasions because we just don't have the bus drivers. Come to find out, they have bad hours. They work 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon. Oftentimes have to pick up other jobs. Don't make enough. And recently, one of our elementary schools had to institute a 1-mile radius where no school bus, you have to walk within 1-mile radius at Spring Mountain Elementary because we just don't have the bus drivers. Lastly, and I'll email the other 2 things, but lastly, I just want to say at the end of the day, education must be a priority, not just one of the priorities. Education is the core foundation of our society. and there must be a mechanism for legislation to guarantee funding for our school each year. The fact that legislation is scrambling each year last minute to determine funding for our schools is troubling. Many of the issues presented today by the concerned folks of our community will most likely continue until you address the yearly stable funding that is required for our schools.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Shane Wendell. I'm here tonight to share why I'm concerned about our education system. Oregon has some of the lowest graduation rates in the country, and teachers are continually expected to do more with less. This system isn't working. I'm worried that my son, who is currently in eighth grade, is going to fall between the cracks next year. He is a super smart kid, but struggles in general education settings. He has actually been receiving special ed services since he was in second grade. Even with my wife and I doing everything we can to stay involved, talk to the teachers and support him, he misses a lot of school. He doesn't feel confident speaking in big classes, and he frequently has 36 to 38 kids in his classes. He really enjoys hands-on learning, though, and I believe that CTE programming will help him get the credits he needs to graduate because he definitely isn't doing well in the standard class setting. I currently work in construction. I was a boilermaker for 9 years. I know there's good money to be made working in the trades or learning hands-on skills. And if my son isn't going to end up in college, I'd like to see him to be able to try out some CTE classes and explore his options. I would like to see the Oregon legislature fully fund CTE programming so that kids like mine get more chances to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you all. So our next group can come up forward, and then we have Gunnar Hess, Jennifer Heck, and Dr. Reina Vega.
We don't know which one it was, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I can go first.
Oh, okay.
Are you going?
Good evening. Thank you, Chair Roblin and committee members. My name is Kelly Kupchak. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Tradeswomen, and I want to thank you very much for your time in this an opportunity to listen to the citizens of our state. I just want to share briefly that we are a nonprofit that works to ensure women and girls have access to opportunities in the skilled trades, and what we know is that Measure 98 is critical to the success of many of our students because Oregon remains challenged in terms of graduation rates. We know it's imperative that we address this through evidence-based interventions, but also in offering viable opportunities that provide our young people across the state with options. Measure 98, as you all know, was implemented to support career and technical education, as well as ensure that there's dropout prevention strategies for our students. And we know that a full investment in Measure 98 can immediately shift the trajectory for our students. So we'd like to urge you to fully fund Measure 98. We looked at a study from 2016 that shared that researchers found that students that had greater exposure to CTE classes were more likely to graduate, and that students that had CTE coursework graduated high school by 21 percentage points compared to their peers. So we know that this is a feasible solution if fully funded, and want to thank you for your time and listening, and thank you for investing in Oregon's children.
You got 18 seconds.
Okay, well, hello?
You don't have to be that close. You can go back ways.
Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, check, check. Ooh, there I am. Okay, first off, thank you all for being part of this committee. This is a very complicated situation, and whereas I don't envy you, I certainly honor you and the role that you're playing here. My name is Jeremy Acey. I represent Gateway to College National Network. I am managing a collective impact initiative called PDX Bridge across Multnomah County, and our objective is to support our least served youth, foster, homeless, and adjudicated youth,
as they exit state care, graduate from high school, and we support them through college. We have an 87% completion rate. My testimony to you regards just those people, foster and homeless youth. While we are all aware of the growing homeless population in Oregon, the majority of the houseless are, in fact, invisible. They're couch surfing, staying with kin, and doing all they can to survive. They can scarcely finish a semester of school without a traumatic episode. While there are federal mandates in place to support homeless youth in school through McKinney-Vento liaisons, and ESSA has mandated liaisons for foster youth, still only 10 to 20% of youth from these populations end up going to college, and the majority of those end up dropping out before completion. To explain in explicit detail how important this is, statistics show that 40 to 50% of youth in foster care will end up homeless within 18 months of emancipation. And of both youth and adults counted among the homeless, 50% have experiences in foster care. There is a clear and efficient pipeline from state care to the streets. So my question to you is this. These young children are wards of the state, which means they're our children, they're your children, they're all of our children. What additional supports and programming might we provide to ensure these kids who are the least likely to succeed get a fair chance of succeeding in school?
I finished in time. Good job.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Rain Vaga. I am the board chair of the North Clackamas School District Board of Directors. And I would like to take a slightly different tack by, first of all, welcoming you all to what I know you agree is the finest school district in the state of Oregon. Now, some people say I'm biased, but I'm sure that's not the case at all. Many of the issues of concerns that you've heard tonight, and I'm sure you've heard elsewhere, are issues that are of concern to you as well as the entire state of Oregon, especially when we talk about things such as graduation rates being the third lowest in the nation. At the North Clackamas School District, the average school graduation rate is 84.1%. In Oregon, it's 76.7. In our Hispanic and Latino community, the graduation rate for 16-17 was 84.2%. Oregon is an average, 72.5. For Black, African, and African American, 82.8 in North Clackamas graduation rate, 67.6 in the state of Oregon. For economically disadvantaged, 79.9 in North Clackamas, 70.1 in Oregon. Underserved races and ethnicities. In North Clackamas, the graduation rate, 83.7. And in Oregon, the average is 71.1. We are extremely proud of those numbers and percentages. And I would say that since 2010 and 11, North Clackamas has improved its overall graduation rate 17 percentage points. And for students of color, graduation rates have improved 30 percentage points in that same period. Now, I noticed the superintendent just had to leave the room for a minute, so I'd like to take the opportunity to invite you all over to his house after the meeting tonight. I hope you will indulge me for a few moments about budget realities, which you have heard so much about. Let me drill down to what it means to North Clackamas. Unfortunately, the current level of educational funding is well below the 2003 to 2005 state funding levels, and I'm sure you all know in terms of a percentage. In preparation of the 2018-19 budget shortfall, we will need to make $3.9 million in operating reductions. Of the $3.9 million in cuts for next year, $3 million will come from employee salaries and benefits. These reductions may manifest in a combination of furlough days and delays in pay increases, possible reductions in force. The bottom line is that the district is forced to spend more than we are taking in, which is not sustainable. Deeper cuts to offset PERS liability will additionally be required over the next several years. The school board at this point is considering a local option for next fall. In talking to my colleagues, it is not completely clear if that we're going to go in that direction, but it's something we're discussing, especially over the PERS ramifications over the next 5 years. If I had to say one last thing about what we're doing right, I would say it would be equity. As you travel the state, I would encourage you to look to see what districts are doing to include everyone. In 2014, we spent 6 months reaching out to our community, the board and superintendent in collaboration to come up with certainly one of the first, and I know it's one of the greatest statements in Oregon school district policy. It's our equity policy, and we use that as a lens to look at everything we do in the district to ensure that each child, especially those that are historically underserved, from special ed to people of color, that they have equal opportunity, and that we actively go out and communicate not only with students but with families to include them into what can seem a daunting system called a school district and a school, and how to help them all achieve. So that, along with, you've heard about career technical education and wraparound services, they all work together. And finally, I will just say, for the most part, please quit dumping things on school districts if you're not going to fund it. We can do so much, but we should not be the last resort where we receive some funding and then the funding sunsets, and once again, we are responsible for maintaining. That doesn't help. I think what it does, it perhaps ends up in evenings like tonight where people are frustrated. Thank you for your time, and I'll give you the map of the superintendent's house.
I was going to say, because you didn't give us the address, and most of us are not from here, so we need a map or whatever, so thank you. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
So our next group could have been Juanita Hess, Gunnar Hess, Jennifer Heck. Come on up. And I don't see the other two, so Kathleen Jenskig and Dan Reinet.
Robinet.
Come on up. And then on deck, we would have Youngjin Yan and Gemma Burke. Nope, yeah. You can be up there now.
Come now.
Come on up.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. I'm just a concerned parent, and a few of my concerns, safety, as you've heard before from one of the teachers who even spoke about the safety, you know, when we put our children on a bus or drop them off at...
Share your name.
Sorry, it's Jennifer Heck. When you drop your child off at school, you don't want to look in their eyes and wonder if this is the last time I'm going to see you alive. So please, do whatever you can to make our children safe at school and help teachers who are protecting our children every day keep them safe too. Secondly, teacher pay cut. So in the North Clackamas School District, many parents move here because it has a great reputation for quality education. But the teachers are experiencing 2 years of pay cuts. So I would like to encourage you all to find a way to not make that happen, because that shouldn't happen to great quality educators. Secondly, we have a bus driver shortage, and I don't know what needs to be done to solve that. They probably need increased pay, and they need probably some bus monitors on challenging routes. But there's been kids who've actually had to get off buses lately because there's not enough bus drivers. So that is an immediate concern. Class size, you've heard. Class sizes are too large. You've heard all the educators speak to all of the other challenges they're facing throughout the day, let alone teach children. We need more counselors. We need to consider ways to help with well-being, like spending time in nature is shown to improve well-being. So find some way to get the kids outside that will help reduce stress. And let's see here, I have a few other things. We need more instructional assistance, more eyes on the kids. And then lastly, I just want to talk to the North Clackamas School District. They're in the middle of a boundary realignment, and they speak to equity policy, and yet at the same time, the current proposal is not equitable for both sides, so I'd like to ask them to make that right.
I don't know how close I need this. Can you hear me?
Fine.
Okay. I'm Kathleen Jeske, and this is my 30th and final year of teaching. I'm retiring at the end of this year, and I'm currently the vice president of Cambie Education Association, and I've worked with Oregon Save Our Schools, and also as a result of what's been going on for about the last 5 years in Oregon and around the country, I've been working with a group called Badass Teachers, and I'm on the national board of directors of that group. Every single thing that everyone has said tonight is absolutely true. We do need all these things. We need funding for all these things, for the students to have smaller class sizes so they can make personal connections. Our special education is in crisis, and our kids are under a lot of pressure. And suicide rate is going up. And I have felt this increased pressure in the last 5 years. And ironically, what I'm hearing tonight is a lot of people who pressed 5 years ago for this high accountability from teachers, for all children to pass a massive test that they are still taking, the Smarter Balance Assessment, which takes our third graders, now that it's shortened, the shortest one took 8 hours to take this test. Every year we have third graders that cry hysterically because they are so frustrated and upset. I teach sixth grade. By the time my students get to me, they're already discouraged. They already think they're stupid, and they're not stupid. They are brilliant. Even kids that are in special education. I have students that are in special education and talented and gifted. And we have narrowed everything down so much, and I do not know how much money all of this is wasting with this giant assessment system and data gathering that we have no way to really protect. We have children on screens all day long taking tests for hours and hours. I teach for the last 25 years. I teach language learners, and I have seen them become very discouraged with all of this. First, they take ELPA. I'm almost done. First, they take ELPA. If they don't pass ELPA, then we give them an English language assessment anyway to assess their reading. That doesn't assess their reading. That assesses their language again. And again, by the time they're in sixth grade, they think, I failed, I'm stupid, I give up, I'm not even going to try. I want to see all the things come back that we used to have, career education, and I'm telling you, there's a big pot of money you could get if you would really take a look at how much this new system that's put so much pressure on me that I am done at the age of 58 with a job that I loved and is also, you know, it rolls downhill. You know who's at the bottom. Right below me are the students. That's where the pressure is coming from. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dan Robinette. I teach physics here at Clackamas High School. In fact, if you were to go about there, you'd see product of a day's work, which my students are making musical instruments to study standing waves and how the blend of music and art and physics can come together. And none of that matters to my kid who found out that her boyfriend has been raping her sister. None of that matters to the kid who is suffering from a mental health crisis. None of that matters to the loads of kids that I'm seeing now that I didn't see 30 years ago. And every kid matters. We're here to ask, what do we need to do for our kids? And the answer, in a way, is easy. It's about people. It's about that adult connection that our kids need. I think the research is clear, but this isn't about research or numbers. This is about that one-to-one connection. Getting to know that kid, helping that kid. I love teaching. I love it to pieces. And I started my career on the eve of Measure 5. And the first 10 years, I thought, well, we'll figure this out. And then the next 10 years, I thought, well, we'll muddle through. And now in my third decade of this, I'm thinking, 2 minutes isn't enough to really explain the problem. 30 years hasn't been enough. I'm going to be there tomorrow. I'm going to do what I can for my kids. But what we really need is money. It's boring, it's not a magic answer, but that's what we need. I'm going to be here for the kids, and maybe I'll come back in 30 more years to see if we've figured out what we actually need to do. Thank you.
Thank you all. And our next panel can come on up. And if there's anybody who chose to write their name down in invisible ink, They should raise their hand now, because these are the last two people who signed up. But we do have a little bit of time, so if there's someone that would like to speak, now is the time to go in those little seats down below there. Or since it's only one, come all the way up. You may have to spell your name for us, but we'll have...
Hi, my name is Beth Mitchell, and I've spent 20 years in education. I spent 10 years in Lake Oswego School District, and this is my 10th year here in the North Clackamas School District. And echoing what everybody else has said tonight, when I first got into education, it was cut after cut after cut, and it was like, we can do this. We're going to be creative, and we're going to figure out ways to do less with more, and ways to do less with more, and ways to do less with more. And last night I was at, I'm the secretary for the classified union here in the North Clackamas School District, and the theme all year has been staffing, subs. We don't have enough people to do the jobs that we need to do, and it all comes down to funding. We need funding. And about a year ago, I got really excited because I ran across the Oregon Quality Education Model Report. And I was like, yes, this is it. Here's data. People love data. People love a roadmap. People love knowing what the problem is, how do we fix it, and what's the exact number that we need to do to fix it. And so then I started to ask people, so we have this information. Why is this still a problem? And I'd like to share with you that I am not a really good proofreader. I often make mistakes in that, and I figured it out. There was the word may in that report, and it should have been must. This is what we must do to provide the education that everybody deserves. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Gemma Burke, and I'm a mother of three daughters, and I was a teacher for 20 years in private school sector, and two of them graduated from private school. You may be familiar with it. It's the Delphian School. And my third daughter is in this county school, Seth Lewelling, and actually I'm really surprised to say that she's learning a lot. She's 5 1/2, and she can recite the Pledge of Allegiance, and so I'm happy about her progress, but I just want to state that for all, you should not go assumed that the education of our children is a family activity. Schools and families should have a good line to communicate with each other, and I also believe that every student can make accomplishments in a proficiency-based education system. That doesn't mean eradicate tests, but it means take the clock off time. I mean, take the clock off classes. You know, you don't just do writing for 15 minutes. You want to have students be able to push through barriers. But my main message is that people are worried about what's happening to the children in schools. If you look into it, any student that has committed suicide or homicide, or any adult for that matter, if you look into it, you will find that that person is very highly likely on some kind of psychotropic drugs. And if you want to give schools more money, where is that money going to come from? Well, the drug companies are leeching billions of dollars out of taxpayer contributions to the government. And on those drugs, the Ritalin, Prozac, it says one of the side effects is suicide or homicide. If you keep it out of schools, if you actually make schools a drug-free zone, you won't have to build fences. You can have art classes, PE, etc. That's my main message.
Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Yong Xin Yan. Like her, I have three sons here in the Happy Valley North Clackamas School District. And everybody, you know, ask for more money and giving more money, all our problems can be solved. We all agree with that. But without more money, what we do? We still need to do something. So here are my very controversial suggestions. One, lengthen the school year. Increase the class size. Pay teachers a third more. When I went to middle school in China, my class was 64 students. And I believe, given a limited budget, increase the class size is better than cutting the school days. Second, change the pay style. Right now, the least in demand have the best teachers. Coding has no teachers. We should have the pay format, or whatever you call it, such that the most in demand are best paid so that get the market rate, actually get the people there. And third, actually, we can save a lot, increase our efficiency tremendously by moving the summer vacation to winter. Here in the Northwest, that's a much better idea. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
Yep. So are there a couple other people who wanted to speak? They can come up on stage right now.
Oh, maybe I'll move here since no one else is here. Oh, she's coming. Okay. Oh, hi there. My name is Liz Woodworth, and I have two kids, two boys here in the North Clackamas School District. And I had been thinking for a week since I got the notice about this meeting about what to say, and I said, oh, I'm not going to share my remarks because I couldn't identify my priorities, and I thought, oh, there's so much I want to talk about. I really think we need increased funding for technology and for arts education and music education in the schools. And then I was just thinking about it, and sorry, excuse me. And at CORE, I just really think that the key thing is funding of high-quality educators and teachers, because I just I watch the news every day, and I see information about teachers striking in West Virginia and Oklahoma and Arizona, and I see news reports about teachers who have to hold down 2 and 3 jobs to make ends meet as educators, and I just really... I moved to Oregon 2 years ago from Nevada, where Clark County has some of the lowest per pupil spending in the nation. And we moved to Oregon because we're committed to public education and we really wanted the best for our sons. And so I really just wanted to express my support for teacher salaries so that we can have committed professional teachers that are valued as professionals. And so I really think that's the highest priority we need to focus on. I know it may seem trite, but I just wanted to voice my opinion. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Leslie Graham. I'm a parent of a sixth grader. We're happy to be in Clackamas. We've lived here all his life. I attended Portland Public Schools as a child, Lincoln High School, and I can tell you there's a big difference. I can attest to the oversized classrooms. One of the ideas that I had as far as additional funding was the kicker and to overturn it. I don't think there's another state that has such a thing. I was a little shocked actually to see the kicker come through this year, given that we've been through some of the worst economic times, right? So I had something else in my mind, but clearly, I did not prepare to be up here, but thank you so much for your time. I can tell you that when I did some research, studies show that classroom sizes are optimal at 17 students per teacher. And every student added after that, the decline of learning goes. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. So that's my two cents. I can agree with just about everything everybody said up here. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So that ends the testimony. I don't see anybody else running forward. If you want to, you can come up. We'll give you the chance. You have to come quickly, though. I do want to say, while this last person is coming forward, if you really don't have anything to do, well, even if you do have something to do, you need to change your schedule on May 11th, 12th, 17th, and 18th and come watch the play that's being set up behind us. So I like to make sure that I meet my commitments to the students that gave up their day to practice today. So come watch The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on this stage coming up May 11th, 12th, 17th, and 18th. And here you go.
Hi. My apologies to everyone who's wanting to go home. Thank you for coming to my classroom today. My name is Renee Pearson, and I teach at Happy Valley Middle School. I teach food sciences. This is my 11th year with the district and as a teacher. And I did not come prepared to speak today, but as I sat in the audience, I kept thinking about the year that we've had at Happy Valley Middle. Earlier in the year, a lovely boy, seventh grader, killed himself. Last week, on Thursday, we had a girl overdose in the bathroom. She was taken away, 911, put in the hospital. Later in that afternoon, another one of my girls, these were all my students, by the way, dropped between fourth and fifth period of what appeared to be an epileptic seizure. Turns out she had post-traumatic stress and was having an extreme anxiety attack, and she was taken away in an ambulance. Shortly after, well, the day, I can say that the district responded immediately. They sent a crisis team of the most beautiful, caring adults into our building, and throughout the hallways that day, everywhere, after Mason died, they were everywhere. They were in every classroom. They were standing in the hallways. Any child that walked out of their room and needed space could walk into the arms of a loving adult who would be there to care for them. We had a crisis room where they could go and sit and cry, be listened to, talk, say whatever they needed to, and 3 days later, they were gone. About a couple weeks later, we had a behavior lesson in the classroom, teaching lessons about how to be kind and things like that that teachers do, and my kids were mutinied against me, absolutely, and I just gave them the floor and let them talk, and they said, this is BS. They say they care about us. You say you care about us, but they don't come in and they don't do anything until somebody dies. Where are you every day that I cut myself? Where are you every day that I want to die? You're not here. We have 1,100 students in my school and two counselors. It can take a kid weeks to get in to see a counselor. So the only time that we have someone to care for those kids' emotional needs is any spare moment I might have in the classroom, which I have an average of 36 kids in every class. Today, when you came, you were in my very smallest class, by the way, which I was really disappointed. I wanted you to come to my classroom of 39, but you came early anyway. The kids are angry. They say right out loud to me, you don't care about us, and I know that's not true. And I think deep down they know it's not true, but what they see is adults who aren't doing anything to provide for their needs. And the education and all of the wonderful lesson plans that we have mean nothing to them if we don't show them that we love them and that we're there for them no matter what. So I'm up here just to tell you my kids' stories. They're not here to talk to you. And I hope you'll remember them as you pass legislation and as you listen to the other side and those who tell you that we don't need more funding, we don't need smaller class sizes, we don't need this, we don't need that, we just need more teachers to do better. We're doing everything that we can, and our kids need more. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to say, yeah. I do want to personally thank all of you for showing up. Our committee, I know, unanimously believes the same thing. We need to hear from people throughout the communities, and what we hear is not always easy to hear, but it is necessary for us to do our jobs. And we know the commitment you had to make to be here tonight. Many of them were teachers that we saw earlier in the day, like this last person. After a full day of work, most teachers are pretty exhausted. It takes a lot out of people, but they are willing to come and commit more time tonight to make sure, as the last person said, their kids are heard. And I think for those of us who have been in education most of our lives, we know that commitment is there, and I want to make sure that you know that we understand how much you put into what you do each and every day. And to the parents and others that came tonight, thank you for being here and being a part of this committee's work. And with that, we will adjourn our meeting.